Welcome back, Joe Torti Show, 97.5, The Fanatic. We're going to get to Joey in a second. Tyler, are you a golfer? I always forget whether you're one who golfs.
I have, in fact, swung golf clubs and hit the ball on a golf course. I do not consider myself a golfer.
Okay.
I've played the game of golf.
So, a buddy of mine tweeted, what does, and someone who's like a golf pro, says, what does good at golf mean to you? I always hear things like, my friend is a good golfer. What is your definition of a good golfer? I've been very confused for so many years. Feel free to comment. Yeah, do you have a thought on, have you ever described one of your friends as a good golfer?
So, one of my best friends was a college golfer.
Okay.
So, he is the best golfer that I've played with.
Okay.
I've seen people that are, you know, a little bit better, but personally played with, he's the best golfer that I've played with. And the disparity between me and him, and I'm not good at all.
Okay.
But it's like night and day.
Okay.
So it gets to the point, like, we haven't played together in a while, but when we were a little bit younger, we would play, you know, somewhat frequently.
Okay.
And, I mean, it's 20, 30 strokes almost.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, so I think that that is, like, if someone golfs in college, I feel like that's kind of common knowledge. You'd be like, all right, that person's a good golfer. I broke it down into 8 tiers, because as you know, tiers are what I live for. So it's my operation. Tier 1's never golfed before. Tier 2 is driving range only. 3 has been out a few times. 4 is shoots under 100. 5 is shoots under 90. 6 is could go pro. 7 is a pro. 8 is a top pro. Okay. So I feel like for me, I would feel comfortable with someone I didn't know describing a friend as good at golf if they're anywhere better than shoots under 90. Would you say shoots under 90, could go pro, is a top pro? Like, I feel like that's what my definition would be. But I do feel like the scale slides when it's like somebody thinks that you're good at golf because you can go, you know, 3 hours and around and not be like holding everybody up and shooting 140.
Not losing a ball a hole, basically.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. So the best round I've ever played, and I always say that the my biggest downfall at golf normally is I am a garbage putter.
Okay.
Horrible. Yeah. Like, add 10 to 12 strokes because I can't putt.
Ouch.
A buddy and I played, you know, best ball off the drive, and I think I got, it was the first and only time I shot in the probably mid-80s, I would say. By far the best game I've ever played. Other than that, I would normally, and I haven't played in a while, probably would be terrible if I went out now, but when I was playing a little bit more frequently, somewhere between 90 and 105 would be my game.
It's a big range.
It's a huge range.
Right, that's surprising.
And it comes down to, am I putting well that day?
See, to me, I'm surprised, and I'm no golf expert, but to me, like, you get to a level in golf where it's like you break through doors and then you never go backward. Like, that's what I've, so it's like breaking 110 is a huge milestone. But after you get under 110, you're never going to shoot over 110 again. And then after you get under 100, like, same deal. I'm surprised that you could shoot in the mid 80s, which is a freaking phenomenal, like that's a tremendous round.
We were playing best ball, so well, it helped significantly.
I guess that helps. Than to go to 105.
So I would say if you were to average the scores that I've played as, you know, from an older teen to an adult, because, you know, we played when we were 13, 14, 15.
Sure.
It wasn't that good.
Okay.
But right. In that range, I'd say probably like 98 to 102
okay.
would be my range.
So I would not describe you as a good golfer.
I would not either.
But I would not. I would also describe you as someone that I would not have a problem bringing out, because if you're shooting from 98 to 102, you're not going to be holding up the entire course. You're not going to be embarrassment. You
sure.
know the rules. Like, you know. All right. That means that Zuli and I, whenever this social distancing thing is over,
you're going to have to let me get out to the driving range a couple times.
Oh,
I haven't played in like 2 years.
Oh, no. The fun is going out there and seeing what happens.
The last time I went out and swung a club, we went to a Topgolf.
Oh, nice. Me too.
In Vegas.
Oh,
and it was
good for you.
The worst experience I've ever had.
What?
It was literally the worst golf. The place was beautiful. It was an awesome time with the boys.
Okay.
Other than the fact that I was awful, got me really angry.
Because the boys were playing well?
And almost got me in a fight with one of my friends.
Yeah, because the boys were playing
well. Yeah, and of course, you're with eight of your best friends. You know, you start getting mocked and all
everyone
that.
Of course.
Yeah, of course. So, you know, the last time I had a golf experience was not great.
Okay. All right. Let's go to Joey in South Philly next on The Fanatic. What's up, Joey?
Hey, what's going on, guys?
How you doing, man?
I'm doing all right. I just wanted to weigh in on the Jalen Hurts thing because it seems like that's what the topic is for right now.
Uh-huh. Sure.
Yeah, so, I mean, to me, it's clear, and I mentioned this before, briefly after the draft was over, that the Eagles organization is showing me that they're giving up faith in Carson Wentz.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have Mike Missanelli actually pointed it out today earlier, he comes on the air and says that Doug Peterson has a hidden beef with Carson Wentz or just doesn't like him too much. Of course, you know, you have someone like Mike Missanelli coming on and saying that, and the Eagles fan base is going to start to believe it more.
Well, I mean, I can't speak to that because I don't know. I don't know what Mike knows, but I certainly haven't gotten that opinion. But the thing that I have seen, Joey, that's clear is that something has changed in between them inking Carson to that big deal, and obviously what happened on day two of the draft.
Right, exactly. So, I mean, listen, I'm just going by what I see, what everyone sees. In my opinion, they're losing faith in him, and eventually they're going to want to change directions and go with Jalen Hurts. And again, and also, Missanelli actually came out earlier and said, Carson Wentz is a nerd. I don't know. I mean, that's hearsay. But my point is, he's actually saying that the Eagles, in his own way, are ready to move forward from Carson Wentz sooner rather than later. And I agree with him.
Well, if that's the case, and Joey, I'm not saying that you're wrong. Thanks for the phone call, because like I said, their actions since then have not suggested that they have the utmost confidence in Wentz. If that is the case, that is a horrible decision, either now or previously, because it has not made a whole lot of sense to act and give Carson Wentz the massive contract and then draft Jalen Hurts in the second round. And, you know, the idea is that you have a transformative experience by drafting all of this speed and trading for Marquise Goodwin and having everything kind of be completely different on offense. Unfortunately, as Doug Peterson said in the press conference today, and Tyler, this is the second one, that the offense kind of is not going to be dramatically, drastically altered, despite the fact you've got all these new pieces in there. And I don't know about you guys, I thought the offense looked pretty brutal. This is what Doug had to say.
I don't think from the naked eye you're going to see a ton of different concepts, different ideas, different things from the naked eye. What you're going to see from our standpoint is subtleties within, you know, what we do as an offense. Protections, the play action game, screens, even the run game. Those are all things that we're going to work on in training camp. But I think overall, you're not going to see big wholesale changes. We didn't overhaul the entire offense. And keep in mind, this offense won a world championship a couple seasons ago. So we're just finding ways to make it better at this time.
I don't know how I feel about that, only because, in my opinion, and part of this is because the weapons have not been there, because you haven't had the offense operating at full strength from a wide receiving perspective, and you've had running back injuries and stuff, so I get all of that. I don't necessarily love the way that the offense has looked the longer that Doug Peterson has been here. And it's not to say that it's his fault. I thought in 2017 you saw a lot more of the jet sweep motion. I thought you saw more, just creative looks that, by the way, the Chiefs and the Rams and some of the more creative offenses over the last couple of years have utilized to great effect. Part of it, I am assuming, is because you've got injuries and you've got J.J. Arcega-Whiteside starting for reasons unbeknownst to anybody, or at least unforeseen because of all of those injuries, that you can't do all of the bells and whistles and window dressing and stuff like that. But I have to say, if things aren't going to look all that different to the naked eye, I'm a little bit disappointed in that news, to be completely honest with you.
I'm curious, but what you brought up with the level of skill and all that kind of stuff, if that's the case, then this year's team should look a whole lot different because of what they just did in the draft, because of how they addressed the draft, how they approached the draft with that three-pronged, is he healthy, can he run, and does he love football, right? Or is it, can he catch, and does he love football? If the can he run is factor number one, or even top three, like they say it is, then that says to me that the offense is going to look entirely different. If they believe that these guys can play, if they believe that Rager could be a productive outside guy, if they believe that Hightower could be a productive player in the first year, if they believe Watkins, Goodwin, the same thing, you would think that would make it to be that the rest of the offense would be entirely different.
Well, I mean, from a results perspective, I'm sure. Like when you're watching, say, Greg Ward try to run a route and Jalen Rager run a route, I'm assuming that Rager's going to get to wherever he's going much quicker than Greg Ward is. But it was more of like a, when Doug was talking about conceptually, and it's more about protections and play actions and stuff like that. I'm holding out hope that that means like jet sweep motion. I'm holding out hope that that means some of the more creative screens that we've seen here. Obviously, Andy Reid is the king of the screen game, so that's something that we've gotten used to seeing here in Philadelphia over the last, you know, 20 years or something like that. But if it's going to just kind of be better versions of what we saw last year, that's all I'm saying, is that that's not a terribly exciting deal to me. 610-632-0975 is your phone number to join the conversation. You can also reach out on Twitter as well, at Joe Torti and at 97.5 The Fanatic. Okay, so we had Doug Peterson discussing things today. All of that that press conference stuff, and you probably heard the press conference, you probably heard the shorter version of the press conference. We've been playing clips. Basically, for me, my overall takeaway is that it's good to be consuming football information again. Because, you know, I've been thinking about this a lot. How many teams or people or players or organizations or whatever had heat coming to them this season and kind of ducked it because of, what's it called? Oh, yeah, the global pandemic. So, like, I think about the Astros. Tyler, you were telling me earlier you think that teams are determined to remember that, like, whenever baseball like starts back up again, the Astros won't be like, come on, guys, we all forgot about that because of the coronavirus, right? Like, do you anticipate that the Astros are going to have the icy, chilly reception?
I kind of do, and I don't know if it's going to be to the extent that it would have been had we been, you know, seeing baseball for the last month and a half. But I do kind of think that that's going to be the case. I think the one team that will kind of almost skate away almost free is going to be the Boston Red Sox.
I think so too.
Who just got kind of their sanctions handed down, and they were like Astros light compared to what the Astros got.
Right.
And I don't think the Astros got enough.
Right. I think
the Red Sox are going to get out of this thing like they're looking at each other like, yo, we just got 2 months of no baseball and the Astros are still on everybody's mind.
We're skating, baby.
Yeah, we might be all right.
I was thinking about this in Philadelphia. Howie Roseman was not the world's most popular person, and certainly not the city's most popular person after the draft and everything shook out with the draft. I think that the return of football will almost completely erase all of that ill will because people will be so thankful to get football back in any form that they're not necessarily worried about Jalen Hurts in the second round and Davion Taylor in the third round. I think that Brett Brown is a big beneficiary so far. Now, I know people on the station disagree and some callers have disagreed. I think that Brett Brown was not trending in the right direction as the season was coming to a close. I think the pause or the hiatus or whatever the NBA is calling this stoppage has been majorly beneficial to Brett Brown. If for no other reason, then when things resume, there's a reasonable expectation that Ben Simmons could be back. And Brett Brown could have the opportunity to prove this, hey, this team was built for the playoffs kind of deal, and I'm exactly the coach that is the one for the job to help them advance in the playoffs. So that's another area where I think that somebody's situation and fortunes have been improved by the pause and by everything kind of stopping here. I don't know that Ben Simmons makes this team an elite playoff team. I don't think that they're going to be a good playoff team if and when the season ever resumes. But at least Brett Brown is going to have the opportunity to coach for his job with conceivably a full deck here, at least.
Does it make it more or less likely that Brett Brown is back should the season not play at all and they just return next year fresh?
It's a good question. based on what I know about the Sixers and the way that they've done business, which this isn't like reporting or anything like that, but just looking at their pattern of behavior and their history, I find it hard to believe that they would make a coaching change in these circumstances. I think that making a coaching change would not be a terrible idea, especially provided that you brought in the right candidates for interviews and you could actually execute, you know, the hiring process at a high level. But based on this season kind of being an incomplete and not seeing what happened in the playoffs or anything like that, I think that they'd be hard-pressed to make that decision. What do you think?
I think you're probably spot on. The issue that I think a lot of fans are going to have is if that is the case, I think that they will feel some sort of empathy, but at the same time, they're going to look at it and go, all right, so now we have to see another full season of something that we don't necessarily believe is going to work. And then if it doesn't work and they get bounced in the Eastern Conference semifinals for the third time in 4 years in the third straight season, have we just been, you know, banging our heads against the wall for the last 14, 16 months to no avail, because what happened was the exact same thing that happened the last two seasons?
Well, and that's the thing, is that I think that a lot of us in Philadelphia are in agreement, right, that the Sixers have graduated beyond regular season report cards. You know, we know that they're going to make the playoffs. We know that it is likely that they'll be hosting a playoff series. You know, that is kind of the expectation for the team on a year-in, year-out basis, not on like a temporary one-season, two-season kind of flash-in-the-pan thing. That's kind of what we should expect to see from this Sixers team now. And so the only thing that's going to matter moving forward, then, if you've already graduated past regular season grading and expectations, should be, what does this team do in the postseason? You know, we saw Dwayne Casey get fired. We saw coaches who have led their team to playoff victories get fired. Like, it's happened. I think that if you saw the Sixers not win two postseason series, you would have seen a coaching change. I don't know if that'll be the case. I don't know if, you know, the Sixers will look at it and say, hey, well, it took a while for all of us to get back on the same page. Not everybody was in shape. Because I think that'll matter, right? I'm not saying that this will happen, but what if players show up and even after the training camp period or whatever they're going to do, still not ready to go for the Sixers, like still out of shape or whatever? Can you judge Brett Brown on that? You probably should be able to, but will they?
I think that you absolutely should be able to, because the reason being is every single team has been under the same construct and the same parameters for the last 2+ months.
Right.
So if the Sixers are out of shape, one player's out of shape, the whole team doesn't matter. Because if they're out of shape or they're not ready to go, and the Raptors are, the Celtics are, the Heat are, whomever, and they get beat, then that is going to be the only calling card for the fans, is you let this happen.
Right, exactly. It's on your watch. It's exactly right. 610-632-0975 is your phone number to hop aboard the conversation. I agree. I think that when you're looking at Brett Brown's tenure, you know, it'll kind of be whatever lens you view things through, right? Like, hey, it's a guy who got dealt a really tough hand because of the process and everything. I've never subscribed to that. I thought that coaching without expectations was like literally definitionally the best job in the world that you could have. Brett Brown with losing, yeah, all that losing's on his permanent coaching record. He's living the dream for a long time. Now it's, you know, kind of perform or get out time for Brett Brown. And the performances, there have been some good, some bad. You know, Brad Stevens did a pretty good job in terms of the coaching matchup against Brett Brown. Nick Nurse did a pretty good job in the coaching matchup against Brett Brown. Now, I think that those are things that we'll have to keep an eye on whenever you're trying to make a determination about whether this is going to be a successful campaign, whatever that means, definitionally, for Brett Brown or not, and whether his tenure will be successful. He's not going to have a whole lot more cracks at this apple. There are some people that are saying, regardless of whatever the outcome is, barring an NBA title, that Brett Brown should be done, period, and it's time for a new voice. Those are all the things he's dealing with.
One of our friends thinks it doesn't matter no matter what.
That's true. Good friend. Even with an NBA title. Gone. It's done. seen enough. It's a drastic move, I think.
24 hours, he can yell at us. Yeah, for...
Of course. Hey, look, it's nothing that our buddy Devon hasn't said already. It's nothing he hasn't said already. 7 o'clock hours brought to you by Club Risque, the Delaware Valley's premier gentleman's club with 3 locations, Philly, Bristol, and Northeast Philadelphia. For more information, visit clubrisque.com. I want to get into this on the other side. It was one of the other tweets that Tyler sent out from the Fanatic account. Do you feel like Tom Brady was simply tired of New England last season and will be rejuvenated in Tampa Bay, or Tampa Bay, as I've been starting to call it? Or are you hesitant to say he's going to have a big year with the Bucs? Anthony M. tweeted in, I think in New England, both Tom and the franchise are trying to hang on, but New England finally made the choice to start a new era. With the young weapons in Tampa Bay, of course it gives him a shot of life, but he only has maybe 2 years left. Mad Barchetta tweets in, here's what goes through my mind. Joe Montana in Kansas City. And as soon as I type that, I think Joe was probably about 5 at the time, and now I hate you for making me feel old. See, I don't even do it. I don't even do anything. And the hate just flows in from Mad Barchetta. That's okay. I don't mind. I'll accept your hate. I think that this is an uncomfortable thing. But with Tom Brady and the Patriots. But I said it years ago, and I've said it recently too. I kind of stopped saying it this past season as Tom Brady looked old. But I always said Tom Brady could probably play until he's 50 if he wanted to. He's just got that kind of comprehension. He's not all that reliant on his physical tools, his physical skills, et cetera, et cetera. Now that the information came out about those intentional groundings and not taking hits and not taking sacks and all that other kind of stuff that came out with this past season, I'm starting to think that any kind of down numbers last year were by design, and that Tom Brady was just trying to make it out of Dodge alive and able to sign a multi-year deal. He's got 2 more years in Tampa. I don't know if those 2 years are going to be done. I don't know if that's going to be it after that. Not if Jason Peters is looking at it at left tackle and he's saying that he wants to play 2 more years or whatever. Did he say it was until 2022 or 2023 that Jason Peters wanted to play?
It would be either the 2022 playoffs or the 2023 regular season.
That would
get him to 40.
All right. 610-632-0975. I thought that a couple years ago, it looked like the game had maybe passed Jason Peters by, but the Eagles apparently not sure that that's the case. It is the Joe Torty Show, 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Welcome back, Joe Torty Show, 97.5 The Fanatic. We're hanging out until 10. Tyler Zuli is here producing. As we are in the sports holding pattern. Of course, Doug Peterson also kind of sharing some information on what things could look like in the event that that sports are able to return. Obviously, he's in the same boat that we are in terms of waiting and trying to see things. One of the things that's going to be difficult for him is preparing rookies this offseason. This is something that I've pointed to a lot, talking about how many challenges the Eagles have in particular if they are a team that's counting on getting all of this production from this rookie class. And we were talking about how dreadful the wide receiver core is. But you can't possibly trade for DeAndre Hopkins or sign Robbie Anderson or any guys who've actually been in the NFL before. We're going to revamp the wide receiving core with 3 rookies and a traded Marquise Goodwin, who I am not convinced can run at all. But
swap 6 round picks.
Yeah, swap 6. This is what Doug said about getting the new guys all set to go.
I think 2011 is a good comp to where we are, you know, for the young players. You know, obviously this would be the time of year where, you know, we're in the middle of phase two, kind of preparing for phase three, the OTA aspect of our off season. You know, we'd be in the building with a lot of meeting time, a lot of extra meeting time with our rookies, trying to get them caught up with our playbook. And what we're making do, obviously, with the virtual setup, coaches have done a great job of meeting and preparing and getting the guys as close to ready as possible. But we do need the grass time, obviously, to see what these guys can do, see what they have taken away from the offseason from a mental standpoint.
And obviously that's going to be an obstacle that each of the rookies is going to tackle, kind of like what we were talking about earlier with, like, who are the honor students and who aren't in terms of learning football concepts at the NFL level and all that other kind of stuff, right? It's going to be a different thing to have to overcome. I look at it like, if you're the Carolina Panthers, right, and you're Matt Rhule, and you spent all of your draft picks on defense, and I think I saw that 7 out of 11 defensive starters are not going to be back for Carolina. This is a nightmarescape. I feel like this is going to be a full-on disaster for teams that are trying to have rookies step up this year and make big-time impacts. I feel like that's going to be a huge issue when it comes down to it.
You know, you're really talking me, every time you say these kind of things about the Panthers, you make me feel more and more better about what I said about them, you know, 6 months ago.
Yep.
And when they win 7 games, and they're not a good team, but they win 6 or 7 games, and they're not even remotely close to the worst team in the league, I'm going to feel really dumb.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let me pull this up so that I'm not just speaking from where the sun don't shine. Regarding, like, which team, because it was on the article of which teams have done the best in the post or in the off season, and the Panthers were listed there. And I'm trying to remember if it was from NFL.com or if it was from ESPN. Trying to go back through my my history, which is, you know, obviously a nightmare escape in itself. Here we go, ranking the 2020 off seasons. So let's go to Carolina. So you've got Carolina, who the Panthers were 25th in DVOA and 31st in scoring defense a year ago. 7 draft picks on the defensive side of the ball. Here it was, Tyler. Here's the stat. 7 of the 10 players who lined up on more than 50% of the defensive snaps for Carolina in 2019 will not return. So that's not even starters. Who played more than 50%, 7 out of 10, will not be back.
You know what that says to me more so than even the fact that there's a huge turnover? The fact that they didn't even get 11 guys. Like, a single starting group to play 50% of their snaps.
Yeah, exactly.
So not only were they injury-ridden, of course, we know that, but the guys that did seem to make the ability to play, or if have the ability to play, most of them aren't coming back.
It's the truth. You're right about that. All right, you want to hear what they had to say about the Eagles? We've got the full Eagles.
Yeah, right, let's hear it.
All right. So they did what went right, what went wrong, what they could have done differently, and what's left to do. It's a Bill Barnwell article. Okay? What went right? And this is definitely true. Eagles addressed their 2 obvious weaknesses heading into the offseason. Trade for Darius Slay netted them their number 1 corner they needed after years of frustrating play at D-back. And then Howie went all in for speed during the draft by adding Jalen Reagor, John Hightower, Marquise Goodwin. The perennially creative Eagles also found a way to add a run-plugging defensive tackle by signing away Javon Hargrave from the Steelers. And the 1-year, $1 million deal they gave corner Nickell Robey-Coleman might have been one of the best value signings of the offseason. And I think that's true, depending on what Robey-Coleman's role is going to be on the team, right? What went wrong? And we talked about this. Solving the problem at corner might have created holes elsewhere on defense as Philadelphia declined safety Malcolm Jenkins' option and released linebacker Nigel Bradham without really replacing either veteran. Jaylen Mills was re-signed and is expected to move to safety. And the Eagles, we haven't even talked about this guy. The Eagles appear set to hand the middle linebacker job to TJ Edwards after he played 112 snaps as an undrafted rookie. Jatavis Brown could be in the mix. But if teams feel comfortable avoiding Slay to target other mismatches on defense, which is what I would do if I were attacking the Eagles won't realize much of an improvement from their long-awaited move. And I've said this before, that if you roll coverage away from Slay, is your coverage still good enough to like actually execute? So let's finish this up here. What could they have done more? Oh, I just lost this. I'll pull it back up. But what do you make of that so far, what we were talking about, like kind of creating more holes on defense by adding that premier corner in Darius?
Yeah, I think that has some sort of merit. Obviously, it's you're going to be playing, you know, the if you do, if you don't type role here, because if you don't go and get Slay, that your cornerback position is exactly the same as it was to begin or to end last season, to say not very good.
Right.
So you get yourself a legitimate number one corner, and I think that's going to help tremendously. Add that to the fact that you add Hargrave and you get a healthy Malik Jackson. It yes. should have a solid pass rush up front, you know, with the edges of Graham and Barnett or whomever it might be. My issue has been, and you and I have done probably close to 40, 50 shows since, you know, the draft process began, and it has been and remains the fact that the linebacking core is not just unheralded and not just bad. I look at this linebacking core as historically bad. And that's not to say that I don't have faith in TJ Edwards. It's just to say the fact that I don't have faith in the group as a whole to do anything.
I legitimately forgot that he was in line to be the starting middle linebacker.
I mean, you're literally looking at a linebacking core, even if they play nickel, which they do a lot, but even if they play nickel, of TJ Edwards and Nate Gary as your two linebackers.
That's it.
And if you go to a third, it might be Alex Singletary.
Right. That might be where you're looking.
Yikes.
All right, what could they have done differently? Well, they're factoring in the cost of trading away a pick and signing Slay to the 3-year, $50.5 million extension. Could they have just signed Roby Coleman and like Chris Harris Jr.? Perhaps they could have done that. Keeping those picks would have allowed them to draft the safety to replace Jenkins or add valuable offensive line depth they don't have after Jason Peters and Big V left this offseason. Joke's on you, Jason Peters is going to be back, Barnwell. But those picks would allow you to get the other guy that we talked about, DeAndre Hopkins. What's left to do? They're talking about bringing in offensive line depth. They might be looking at Kelvin Beachum, Cordy Glenn, Larry Warford, Ron Leary. Those are guys that they might be looking at. I think Jason Peters is definitely a likely candidate to return. I would have included that. Like I would have included the draft picks for Darius Slay. Maybe if you have those picks, you're not so married to your second round pick. And perhaps your move up is for CeeDee Lamb. Perhaps that's included in a package for DeAndre Hopkins. Like that kind of, it's not that I don't like Darius Slay, because I do, and I think that he helps out big time. It's that I think if there is an alternative way that you could have approached it, it kind of does all circle around Darius Slay and what you could do. Like I think that is obviously because that's one of the largest moves that they made the offseason. If you were going to go in a different direction, you would have to look at that move first, I would think. Not saying that it was bad, but just if you're going to go in a different way. 610-632-0975. Yeah, TJ Edwards, presumed starting inside linebacker. Oh, boy. Drafted two, right? Davion Taylor's probably an outside linebacker more than an inside linebacker whenever he gets up to NFL speed. Sean Bradley, I would anticipate, is a backup inside linebacker for you and special teams contributor, hopefully. Which, by the way, I want to go back to a previous call when we were talking about drafting quarterbacks and building the car and stuff like that. The other big reason why I like building the car is, say that you're stacked at wide receiver or you're stacked at corner and you see another guy who's at the top of your board who is at that position. If you draft that guy, you improve the position overall. And if not, that guy probably helps you out on special teams. That guy probably helps you out in the return game, probably helps you out in a lot of different places. There's only a couple of ways that a quarterback could really help you out, which is why I'm not a big fan of stacking quarterbacks if I can stack linebackers or if I can stack wide receivers or if I can stack corners. I like versatility and the ability to help you out in a lot of different ways. That's another reason why I'm not a massive fan of, once you have a quarterback, stacking quarterbacks up.
Well, and I think the linebackers that they drafted, with the, especially Davion Taylor, with the limited sample size but the high athletic ability and the motor, that gives you somebody that can play multiple positions, especially on special teams early.
Yep.
And, you know, you talk about, like, you bring up TJ Edwards earlier, right? And it's an undrafted guy that you kind of talk about the value you get when we have the conversation about Jalen Mills. Value's there, right?
Totally.
Special teams ability is there. The ability to play multiple positions is there. But that, I don't think, surpasses the ability to be the guy
right
at the middle linebacker position. Because regardless if you play... regardless if you're playing nickel, you're playing base 4-3, you're playing dime, it doesn't matter. It may not be middle linebacker, but it is, you know, green dot wearing, important play calling type linebacker. And I don't know if I trust TJ Edwards to be that guy just yet.
610-632-0975. It's kind of looking like that's the way that they're going to have to go, though, as very few moves have gone to address that position. AJ, we're going to get to you next. We're up against a breather. We're going to take it, and then we'll get to you. 610-632-0975. Joe Torti Show, 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Welcome back, Joe Torti Show, 97.5 The Fanatic. We're hanging out until 10 o'clock here. Hope that you and yours are having a great day, great start to your week. I appreciate you guys getting me through because, as you know, if you've been listening to the show for any length of time, Mondays get a bad rap. Tuesday is by far the worst day of the week on a normal, like, work basis when everyone is working and, you know, in the offices and stuff like that. Because on Monday, you still have kind of like the afterglow of the weekend and you're catching up with your coworkers on what they did and what you did and everything else. You know, by Tuesday, you're just about as far away as you can be for the weekend. And it's death. The Tuesdays are really, really tough.
I think I got to disagree with you.
What, you do?
I do. Wow. And this goes more so back to when I was in school.
Uh-huh.
I hated Thursdays the most.
Why Thursdays?
The reason being... was a couple fold. You had already done 3 days,
uh-huh.
So you were starting to kind of really get, you know, wound down at that point.
I'm with you. Okay.
Thursday was also the day, because I know a lot of teachers were trying to be good people and not give you homework on Friday.
Yeah, load.
So they load you up on Thursday because uh-huh. You're not going to do anything over the weekend.
Right.
Third being, Thursday feels like it's close to the weekend. And you want to go and enjoy your weekend, but you still had a school day, a homework night, probably practice,
mm-hmm.
and then still had to get up early on Friday and do it again
for a
fifth straight day. So Thursday was like my...
That was your drag.
We're
day.
Not even here yet, man. Like, Friday was fine.
Okay.
Yeah, Thursday was rough.
Because you had some teachers that phoned it in on Fridays anyway because they didn't want to be there either. So, like, I get that.
Movie day was great.
Yeah, movie day is phenomenal. Let me ask you this before we get back to the phones. When you were given the unnatural power to schedule your own classes in college, what was your operational procedure for doing that? Or were you slotted in pretty much just based on what you had to study?
So the best year that I had, or at least that I thought, was the year that I had, and most semesters I had 5 classes per semester.
Okay.
So the semester that I thought was going to be great was I scheduled 5 Tuesday and Thursday classes.
Okay.
So like the hour 20, whatever they were.
Yeah, we had 90s. We had 90s.
So I think they were an hour. I think they were an hour 25. Yeah, close. Okay. Right.
Yep.
I thought that that was going to be great until I realized that I had five straight 90-minute classes and I was legitimately dog-tired by the end of the day. That didn't work out very well.
Okay.
But for the most part, I actually scheduled my classes around when my radio shows were going to be at the station.
Gotcha. Okay.
So I gave myself an opportunity to either have early class on the days that my shows were or have off entirely. So my senior year, I both semesters had Friday off.
Oh, nice. Okay.
So I scheduled my show for Friday mornings. So I would do my show, and it was like, I think it was a 10 a.m. show. So I'd do my show 10 a.m. and then either had all the rest of the weekend off, or if it was not a football weekend, could conceivably either drive up to see my fiance or who was my girlfriend at the time, or go home and be home by like 2:30 in the afternoon and have all weekend.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. See, I learned quickly that interspersing school with my fun or my enjoyment or whatever else I was doing work really, really did not work at all. And also, I feel like it would have been very difficult to do what you did and to have the off day on Wednesday in between. So what I did was after I learned that my freshman year, for the rest of it, I kind of loaded down my classes Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday so that I had off Mondays and Fridays, but I had like school days Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. So I feel like having that 3-day work week in the middle was the way that I best operated. And perhaps that is also kind of the root of my distaste for Tuesdays, because it actually ended up being like the first day back that I was working. So, doing schoolwork. So maybe that's why.
Well, let me ask you this too. Did it make it harder for you? Because especially with a lighter Monday or a no Monday, you know, of classes.
Yeah.
Did it make it harder for you to get any kind of schoolwork done until Monday night? I always felt that way where I piled everything up Sunday night. So Monday, I feel like, would be even worse.
See, I'm a modes guy. So, like, I'll get into school mode, and I'll do all of the school-related. Like, it wasn't hard for me to switch.
Okay.
It would be hard for me to switch if I did what you did, and I did, like, Tuesdays, and then I had Wednesday off, and I get into fun mode, and I had to drag myself back into school mode for Thursday. That wouldn't have worked for
me. And it actually, to that point, it really wasn't a fun day for me, because Tuesday, by the time I got done class Tuesday, and then a lot of times Tuesday nights where I had a lot of my like extracurricular meetings and stuff like that.
Sure, yep.
So Tuesday night, I was gassed.
Yeah.
So Wednesday was do all the work for Thursday day.
Oh, so that wasn't even relaxing.
I wasn't going to class, but I was doing work from, you know, that's for 8 hours.
Man. That's brutal. 610-632-0975. Now it's way different. I mean, like, the real world's way different, but then the pandemic world is also different. I'm surprised that people are keeping structure as well as they are at this point. It's good on you guys. Let's go to AJ in West Philly next on The Fanatic. What's up, AJ?
What's up, Joe?
How you doing, man?
Hey, I meant to tell you last time I was on your show, man. I like your show, cousin.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that, bro.
Hey, I don't get to say that too many times. We, you know, we be talking sports.
Yeah, I don't hear it that often, AJ, so I appreciate every time I can get it.
Yeah, man, I'm glad y'all was talking about the Eagles' defense.
Yes.
Because I'm starting to notice something, especially with this pick of Jalen Hurts. You need to stop thinking about how you would build the Eagles and start looking at the track record of the people that's running it, how they build the Eagles.
Mm-hmm.
This is a totally different thing. In the first round, I know I was battling with Mike talking about getting a first-round linebacker. Mm-hmm. In the second round, I like Willie Gay and Akeem Davis, linebacker that went in the third round after Davion Teller. But, you know, I liked a couple of the linebackers. But the way that I saw, the way that he did it, when y'all talked about Sean Bradley and Davion Teller, you should look at how he took the safety and made him a linebacker. They want the people in the linebacker to be speed behind a ferocious defensive line.
Yes.
So they only playing a position. They're not playing man-to-man. They're not playing, and that's why there'd be so many blown assignments and people be open deep, because that's where defense is not predicated on having that guy. So I'm looking like we might not have that guy. He might have a gimmick or scheme that we might be going into. And I like the aspect with the defensive line, because that defensive line is husky, Joe.
Oh, yeah, it is. Well, so I guess the thing that surprised me, and I would agree with you about a first-round linebacker, right, is that even though, like, Stephen Tulloch wasn't a tall guy, he was still a pretty big guy to play linebacker, and that was the best linebacker that I can remember for the Lions for a long time. That was when the Lions' defense was the best. They had a tackling machine back there. I just don't think that they're Nate Gary, you know, type guys in successful defenses playing linebacker. That's why I'm surprised that they're building this Schwartz defense this way.
Yeah, it's going to be it's going to be a lot different. I will hope that we sign Nigel Bradham back if we could. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to tell you about the versatility with the quarterback. You said you would rather stack up on some other positions.
Yes.
Instead of the quarterback. I know you play video games. Sometimes when you run a certain offense, you need a quarterback in short yardage and in the goal line where it's hardest to score.
Sure.
You want to take your quarterback and try to run, and you need that personnel. I'm telling you like this, if you have some type of draft with your friends, you're going to have to pick that athlete that can throw first, because once he go, there's not too many other guys like that.
Sure.
The Eagles got a guy like that now, that in short yardage, he can be a threat, and in the goal line, he should be a threat immediately. This is something that Carson, I wouldn't ask him to do,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not saying that he could or couldn't do it, but I know Hurts can be a threat more than just having the other team practice for it. I'm talking about third and one. You can design plays for him to get it and have a pass action off of it
mm-hmm.
with receivers that all run 4-4. Tell me what you think that is.
Well, AJ, I think that you're right about that, and thanks for the phone call, man. To your point, by the way, in video games, I never, ever, ever have my starting quarterback run a quarterback sneak. And people always laughed at me for it all the time. And then Patrick Mahomes got injured last year. I'm like, ha! See? This is why I do the things that I do. But to your point, right, I think that there are definitely areas where Jalen Hurts can help you offensively. I meant that if you're not utilizing him at the quarterback position, can he help you in other areas? That's all I meant by that. Now, are there packages and things like that that they can use him for? Yeah, absolutely. The thing is, I don't think that he is a wide receiver. I don't think that he's a running back. I think that if you're doing that, you're taking Carson Wentz out of scoring position effectively. Now, am I married to Carson Wentz getting every single red zone play? No, not necessarily. Short yardage plays? No, not necessarily. Packages, it's all good for me. But I want what's best for the Eagles. If it's good for the Eagles that Jalen Hurts is out there, that's cool. But that doesn't sound like the offense is going to be similar. Like, Doug Peterson said that the offense is going to look pretty much the same. Having a guy in there exclusively for, like, bootlegs, rollouts, run-pass options, that sort of, that doesn't sound like it's the same exact offense. It sounds like it's something a little different. Might not be bad, by the way. Might be pretty good, but it's not the same. 610-632-0975. Good call, AJ. Appreciate it. Mike, we're going to get to you next. It is the Joe Torti Show, 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.